Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation, and every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, as you know because you're listening, we have a conversation about what's quickly becoming everyone's favorite subject, food, and particularly about taste. And today, we're having a conversation about an aspect of taste or something that plays into the notion of taste, I think, that is often unexplored. James Beard was famous for saying, when he was interviewed about how he traveled or what he looked for in cities or different places, he would always say that the first place he stopped was the market. And that was years before that became true of so many of us. I mean, I know certainly if I'm traveling, I want to see where people buy food, and not just that, but where a city comes together to in a public market space to sort of live its life in outside or in perform its life, let's say. And today I have on my show someone I think who has done a lot of thinking about the role of markets, both in the dynamism of a food scene, but also in civic life. And that is Robert LaValva, who is the founder of the New Amsterdam Market. And thank you for joining us here in the studio.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And I'd like to start, before we get into the details of the New Amsterdam Market, and if anyone listening isn't aware of what that is, you should go check it out online, because I think right away you see an allusion to history and also a very contemporary food expression of today's food scene. But I want to talk about markets in the bigger space, public markets in civic life, and why you find yourself, as someone with a background in urban planning, having stumbled into this, what I will call a fight for this historic place and a new market in Manhattan.
Well, as a student of the city and as a former city planner and as someone who loves living in the city and observes its daily life, I have always or long been drawn to the market as a part of the city's experience. And in learning that New York had a long and rich tradition and history of public markets of many different types, I became very interested in preserving those few sites like that that we have left and making sure that they can go on with the always contemporary aspect of what markets can be and remain part of that vibrant public space that makes cities what they are.
So what can markets be? What do you think markets are, or what is their potential to be?
Well, most obviously, markets are gathering places. I like to tell people that we have, at this point in our trajectory, all understand what public space is when you talk about a park, a green space, a square. But we have somewhat forgotten that one of the oldest and most continuous forms of public space and public gathering was actually the marketplace. You can go back right to the Forum in Rome, the Agora in Athens. These were not just places to buy and sell, but places to gather and to talk and to meet people and to have a discourse. And that's a very important part of civic life.
Right. And fast forward to modern society and private markets, let's say the shopping mall or its antecedents. And why do we need these places to gather that are public today? I mean, we'll put the food thing aside for now.
Well, I think in part you could just say simply for the sake of diversity in life, we should always preserve an aspect of our culture that is public. And a public space is, without any doubt, has a different feel to it and a different sense to it than a private space. It's something that we know and we recognize, and it's an important part of the human experience.
Right.
So for that reason alone, I think we need that. But as well, I think, especially in terms of markets, and especially as we were talking about earlier, in a society that is so market-driven in every aspect, we should remember one important aspect of a public market site. And in saying this, remembering that there was a time when the American Stock Exchange, for example, literally met outside on the street, on Broad Street, and was known as the curb market, and they transacted their business and their trading outdoors in the rain or in the snow and in the hot sun, under the eye of the passersby. And that was no accident, and it wasn't they couldn't afford to have a roof over their heads, but it was related to a very, very old tradition where there was a sense that there was an important, while commerce is a very key part of our economy, there's a value to having a watchful eye over commerce and how it's conducted. And whether that pertains to food or whether that pertains to stocks and bonds. Right. And we've seen what happens when markets are not regulated. And in the very simplest sense, the public face of the market is a form of regulation.
And to the point that, as you informed me earlier, New York used to have a Department of Markets, the same way that we have a fire department and a police department.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, so if you look at the history of the markets in New York, which began along with the history of the city itself, there was always some urban office, government office, that kept an eye on the markets. Whether in the very earliest days it was known as the clerk of the markets, and they collected all the rents from all the stalls, but they also enforced all the rules. Mm. And that, I think, in particular, the enforcement of rules is another really key aspect of what makes a public market a public market. It's not just a place where people buy and sell, but it's a place where there are rules about what they can sell and how they can sell it. And I think a sign of a healthy market is one actually where one has faith that all these rules are being followed. And the best example I can give of that is the green market. We know that they have many, 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 many rules, and sometimes people kind of gripe about the rules, but the reality is, because it has those rules and is really good at enforcing those rules, you can have faith when you go to a green market that you're pretty much going to buy what you're being sold, and that it really is what you're told it is.
And so just for some people who might not know what the nature of these rules are, especially when you think of a free market, we think there are no rules, which we know is a little bit of a joke. But what kind of rules at the green market, let's say?
So at the green market, obviously being a market that supports regional agriculture and that is a growers only market, their kind of core and most fundamental rules are you have to be growing what you sell there. I mean, and there are various specific exceptions to that, but by and large, you have to be the person who grew that lettuce or who made that wheel of cheese or who raised that pig and is selling the ham of that pig. So, and the enforcement of that rule is what gives people confidence in going to green market, that that person selling that stuff didn't just pick it up at Hunts Point and bring it down and sell it.
Right. That day. And I guess we should underscore that that is not necessarily true of public markets. And when we think of Europe, as I was talking to you earlier, I spent time in Italy and in Florence, some of the public markets there, they operate like fruit stores or fruit, there are wholesalers, there are farmer areas in some of those markets, but they don't necessarily, a dynamic market doesn't have to be growers only. And the New Amsterdam market is a different vision.
Right. It doesn't have to be growers only. And again, I think it all depends on what, as long as it states what it is and lives up to what it says it is, I think that that's the most important aspect. Then what that thing is can vary. There is no legal encyclopedic definition of what a public market is, but I like to say that it's a place where the rules of the market have some sort of civic aim or public aim to benefit the public in one way or the other. You could say, in the case of the green market, one of their aims is to support local agriculture.
Right.
In the case of New Amsterdam market, that's also one of our aims, but expressed in a different way, that we, rather than our New Amsterdam market being a farmer's only market, we allow people who are themselves not farmers, they are purveyors, but they are people who are establishing businesses that source and resell local food. So someone like Anne Saxelby is a great example. Right. She does not make her own cheese. She does not have her own farm, but she is selling cheese from farms in Vermont and New York State and Pennsylvania. Right. We've had similar people selling meat, produce, dairy, fish, these are the kind of vendors that we are helping to incubate at New Amsterdam Market.
So let's take a step back and talk a little bit about the history of New Amsterdam and, mm-hmm. and how where it is and how it came to be.
So it came to be because I had gotten involved with food systems. Right. I had actually gone to volunteer and then worked for this slow food organization uh-huh. back when Patrick Martins was running it in 2002 and 3 and 4. And while I was at Slow Food, I really had an education and saw how many exciting things were happening in the world of new and food entrepreneurship. And I was beginning to see that there were these kind of businesses emerging where someone decided they wanted to learn to be a butcher, and if they were going to cut and sell meat, they were going to make sure it came from farms that they knew and that they could support and that were in their region. Cheesemakers, cheesemongers, similar things. I Right. saw the beginnings of this, and that was an exciting thing. I had visited a market in London called Borough Market, Sure. which showed another aspect of markets, that they can be really exciting and lively and relevant destinations in cities. And those experiences, as along with others, led me to think, well, here we see the beginnings of this change and emergence of local food systems in the city, people starting these kind of businesses. There's a really interesting, great quality to markets, or these kind of indoor, covered, year-round, permanent market mm-hmm. sites like the Borough Market in London. Why not create a market like that in New York City that, rather than being, again, another farmer's market, since we have a great farmer's market system, be instead a market for these kind of small businesses to have a place of their own? Because a business like that wouldn't be permitted at Green Market, and nor should it be.
Right.
It would violate what is their core essence, whereas these are the kind of vendors that we want at New Amsterdam Market. So that began this trajectory in my mind, and I held a one-day market as a kind of a test of the idea in October of 2005, and it proved that there was this kind of emerging new food world. Mm-hmm. And I began to then think of, all right, if this is something that we can make grow in the city, I should find the appropriate site. November of 2005 is actually when the Fulton Fish Market vendors were removed from their home of more than 200 years in Lower Manhattan and removed up to the Bronx. Pretty right. much against their will, but they were right. forced up there after 50 years of the city wanting to do that. And when they removed, what was left behind was two city-owned public market buildings that are very unique and have a character all their own, and that I immediately, especially having worked for the city and with my background in architecture and planning, thought, well, this is a great site, and this is so like that site in London where Borough Market was revived right. into a retail destination. This could be a place where we could do it. And thus began this long path to making New Yorkers aware of that site and to bringing them to the site. Uh-huh. And I was able, after a lot of struggles, to convince the city to let me hold markets at that site, not inside those buildings as I would have liked, but directly in front of the buildings. And that started in 2007, and it began as a one-day event, and then there was another event in 2008, and then it became a monthly market, right. and then it grew into being a weekly market. And in all those years, the market has grown and become a real community of these vendors and attracted vendors that I never believed, or, well, that I thought one day would exist, but I had no idea of when and how and how right. they would emerge, such that even really almost it was like a missing link that at our very last market of last year, someone who'd once been an intern with us, Annie Myers, had launched her own business as a produce distributor. She brings in produce from Vermont farms and is now already, she actually delivers to Roberta's and oh, wow. a number of restaurants and grocery stores. And that to me was like, wow, if someone now is even doing this with produce, we've really come to a point where something is happening and changing, and that there could be a whole reemergence of a local food distribution system.
Fantastic. We're going to take a quick break. I'm mm-hmm. talking to Robert LaValva, who is the founder of New Amsterdam Market. You're listening to Taste Matters.
You're listening to August by The Hollows on heritageradionetwork.org.
Surely come, and when it does, we'll see the side around, oh, side around, oh, side.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days, and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and I'm talking with a New Amsterdam Market founder, Robert LaValva. I'll remind people listening that if you have questions about markets in general or the New Amsterdam Market in particular, you can call us. The number at the station is 718-497-2128. Or if you're listening to the podcast or you just prefer to write, you can send us an email at info@heritageradionetwork.org. You can also tweet us at Taste Matters HRN. So what you've described or your vision for what the New Amsterdam Market is seems very palatable. I can't imagine someone not wanting to have a beautiful, vibrant market. I'm thinking of Pike Place in Seattle, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking of the Ferry Building in San Francisco. Even in Portland, Oregon, James Beard's hometown, they're working on a public market called the James Beard Public Market, although that has taken – I've known about it for 12 or 13 years.
Yes, I've met Ron Paul. Right. He's been very involved with that, and he's gone through some travails.
So how were you received? What's happening? What are the politics of this simple, compelling idea?
So let's say it has not been an easy path, but it's been nonetheless a very also promising at the same time because, so again, in 2007, I was able to hold a market at the fish market site and began promoting this idea that the fish market should be saved and preserved and brought back to life. And little did I know, or I did know, but it was not in an official way, because what was being secretly planned was that that this historic city-owned asset was being viewed as not an asset but liability. Two kind of decaying old market sheds on the water that require significant repairs, and that the city really thought had their life was spent. And that there was no more use to them, the Economic Development Corporation of New York City, which is the kind of the landlord, acting as landlord to these buildings, determined that wouldn't it be just the easiest thing to give them over for development and be rid of them and be rid of that maintenance issue, especially when, in their mind, the market function was over. To be fair, that is certainly a valid approach to dealing with something of that nature. But unfortunately, the Economic Development Corporation, while they've been managing that site for historic reasons, weren't necessarily so attuned or informed to the value of this site as a cultural site. Right. And the South Street Seaport has had a very long, tortured and very complex history itself as a remnant of the original Port of New York, that was being torn down in the 1960s, but that where grassroots activism was able to save just one little piece of it, the area around the Fulton Fish Market, which was still thriving. And there's been this goal since the 1960s to do something with this very interesting, unique part of the city. That, too, has run into problems over the years. So the whole area has been seen as this problematic place that we would all be better off maybe if we could just hand it over to private developers and be done with it. But yet it is such a compelling place, and there has been an enormous amount of public money put into it over the years, that it does beg the question, are we really ready to give this place up? Are we ready to give up these old buildings simply because they require work to be brought back to
right.
life. And what I found is that New Amsterdam Market began evolving at that location, eventually found itself pitted against a real estate development project because that's what was being schemed
right.
behind closed doors. And yet we were in this interesting situation where that real estate development project went through stumbling blocks of its own. The original developer went bankrupt. There was nothing happening there for a number of years. And we, in the meantime, had shown that there was huge support for the market and began attracting thousands of people to our market and to various events that we held, that as much as the city was not so convinced about what we had in mind as a long-range plan, they also knew that there was a lot of support for what we were doing and in some ways helped us. They let us keep holding the market at this location, even while thinking that eventually we would find, you know, leave or find some way of becoming engulfed in within the developer's plans. Who knows what the ideas were
right.
behind it. But in the meantime, I and the supporters of the market have steadfastly continued advocating that the market itself had to be preserved and saved.
And so I have a couple of questions, mm-hmm. obviously. I've got a radio show and you're my guest. But one of the things I'm curious about is what about a plan that has that a developer produces a space to hold a public market? It's not unheard of, I presume, which would be something different from, say, Chelsea Market, for instance. But is there something in those buildings specifically, or is it really the...
It's a few things. Those buildings specifically are incredibly rare and utterly unique and totally irreplaceable. And for that reason alone, there just should be no reason to be rid of them. We'll never have them again.
Right. As you noted, we did tear down Penn. This is the city that tore down Penn Station.
Yes, yeah. and they have equal weight to something like Penn Station,
right.
given the life of the city that they've represented. I think that's reason enough. But to take it one step further, and even to bring it right there, when that South Street Seaport development was put in the 1980s, the private developer at that time, the Rouse Corporation, did put a public market hall in one of its buildings. I don't know how long it lasted, but it wasn't too long before it was turned into a Gap. these kind of
right.
public markets, I think even by definition, are not supposed to be generating the kind of profits that
right.
a developer
can,
would
right.
want.
Right.
You know, you'd want the businesses to pay. They're selling food, after all,
right.
and to keep them honest and to keep the food from passing on those costs, you want these to be affordable spaces. They should be.
Right.
It's not going to compete with the Gap.
But let's talk about that for a second, too, because it's something from the Beard Foundation and the restaurant perspective we get often. And that is, you're talking about local artists, small production artisans using mm-hmm. local ingredients. And I've been to the New Amsterdam Market, which mm-hmm. is wonderful and fun. It ain't cheap. The
right.
food is not cheap. And
right.
so is there a counter argument that actually this is not a public market if in fact... this is not a place that is accessible to everybody?
I think that that's a larger question, because you have to ask, why is the food not cheap? When we're talking about local food, we understand that this is the bringing back of a very, very broken down system, and there are all kinds of inefficiencies, and there are, and it really can't compete with industrial food, and yet we don't necessarily want it to. I would say that it's not a question about the markets per se, but about the kind of food systems that we want to support. And it's not an answer to say, well, it's going to have to remain expensive. But that issue is a much larger issue than just what you might find at a particular market. I think as well, especially a market like ours, is something that still is in its infancy and still is not passing through the volume of food that it could as a fully grown and developed destination. And so we've had to kind of pioneer the way there and make sure that people have to pay their bills as well. I mean, so it's
right.
I think it's still in a moment of growth where as it grows and as the volume of business grows, I think that will also have an impact on the cost of the food there.
Right. It is a challenge, I think,
right.
in many ways. And when I think even of one of the roles of markets was to ensure the competition of vendors so that prices were
right.
regulated
right.
in a free way, let's
Absolutely.
Say. Right. And it's hard when part of the pressure of being there is being able to afford to exist. The Absolutely. Sustainability of the economic model is as important as the sustainability of the land, let's right. say.
I think time will tell,
right.
but I think certainly in all the years of New Amsterdam Market, but also markets in general, I've found the cost of the food is something that we recognize as a challenge, but there's an understanding as to why the food... It all depends on who it is and what they're doing, but when you realize, yeah, on the one hand, it's costing more, but it's supporting a whole system of local farms.
Right.
It's just viewed more... A lot is taken into consideration when right. people look at that food system. And so I think, especially as it's something that we want to build and bring back, it's going to take time. Right. But I think that has to be... It's definitely one of the issues that everyone who's really serious about it wants to see addressed. I don't think anyone wants to just be exclusively only selling very expensive food.
Right. Fascinating. There's a lot of work ahead of you, Absolutely. I would say. I mean, and in addition to supporting local farms, if we're talking about businesses, they're supporting local jobs,
right.
and people are producing these things. And if they're being done here and not somewhere else, that's a benefit to the city as well, I would imagine.
Sure. Yeah. And one... thing to consider as well, and I know for sure the green market system has seen that it has its sales of food through people using EBT and food stamps
right.
has considerably grown, and of course that's also telling us a story that is a sad one, that so many people have to resort to that, but it is multifaceted.
There right. Well, I actually think there's a part of that that's a happy story, which right. is that this is food that everybody wants. That this is
absolutely
like the access is the issue. It's not the desire to have better, more wholesome food.
Right,
right. And on that, I have one last question, and that is sort of speaks to what I said at the beginning about James Beard trying to know a place by going to the market. And I'm wondering what the unique proposition of, let's say, taste or flavor or of New York you see from a place like this. There are pickles, let's say, or everyone's always looking for what New York means in food. And right. for many, many years, New York meant food from other places, and who right. cared what was here? You know, if you were local, you ate New York food at home, and you went out and ate Italian and French and Chinese and all that sort of stuff. So I'm wondering what you think the impact is or what the potential is for the flavor of New York, let's say.
Well, that's actually one of the most, stripped away of all the other issues, that to me is the most interesting and fascinating issue about local food. How does that result in a local food culture?
Right.
I think that story is still being written, especially in a place like the United States or New York City that has been such a center of immigration for so many, for its entire existence. So to me, I think, I don't know what the answer will be, and maybe it's constantly evolving, but I do think one of the foundations of that answer has to be a connection to local agriculture and to seasonality, because that is sort of the common, that is the one constant
right.
that all these cultural variations can be based on, where if you are... So it's beyond just concern with food miles and supporting local economies, which is, of course, also very important. But if you're eating from the land around you and what it best produces and in the seasons that it produces it, that, I think, is kind of the baseline from which a local food culture can grow. And it doesn't mean that you can never use chocolate or coffee or any of those ingredients, but that there is that connection
right.
to the seasonality and to the land around you. And I think... with that foundation, all kinds of interesting things can evolve.
Well, thank you for reminding us that the public market is an integral part of that process in the local food culture. And thank you for being with us, Robert.
Thank you so much for having me.
Next week, we are going to welcome someone who's actually tackling or has tackled the question of sustainability and production at scale. And that is Myra Goodman, who is a co-founder of Earthbound Farms, the largest producer of organic vegetables in the world. It'll certainly be an interesting conversation, controversial and delicious, I think. So join us next time. In the meantime, if you weren't planning on it, now's the time to go out and support a market near you. These are difficult weeks, the February, March, the coldest, just before the things start growing again. So do yourself a favor and do your local community a favor and go out and buy something at a market and say hi and warm someone up. You're listening to Taste Matters. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.